free enrollment at wblinc.org/academy based on availability. The fall session begins September 9th. We hope to see you or your young one there at the Words, Beats, and Life After School Academy.
All right, all right.
Remember, wblinc.org/academy.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county. From another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What? Come on. Get that set.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. This is our regular Tuesday morning show, and we always try to bring you interesting topics concerning the criminal justice arena. Today is no different. We just received a phone call, but I'll share that with you after we get through with Grapevine. We always open up with what we call the Grapevine, information that you can use, the Grapevine. Hey, we just received a phone call less than 3 minutes ago from one of our listeners, and it said that the D.C. Police Union calls for the city's violence interruption programs to be shut down until they examine. That is asinine. That is some more juggy boogie. If you shut down the violence interruption program, you got hundreds of kids who are receiving services, don't have nowhere to go, walk in the streets, and it's going to impact the crime rate. And the cops can use that to justify putting more cops on. Man, because one or two people do something, you don't affect a whole thousand other folks because of this one or two. Why don't y'all cut this juggy boogie out? That's the police union. It's full of juggy boogie, man. The federal judge rules inmate death records can remain secret because they could embarrass prison officials. In response to a public record lawsuit filed by the Reason Foundation, the nonprofit that publishes Reason, a federal judge has ruled the United States government can hide findings about whether people who died in federal prison receive adequate medical care, partly out of fear that those records could be used to criticize prison officials. But this is some more juggy boogie. Guns remain leading cause of death for children and teens in the U.S., the report says. More than 2,500 children and teens between the ages of 1 and 17 died by firearms in 2022, according to a new report. ACLU, D.C. police conduct more stopping with black people. Tens of thousands of people are stopped and frisked by D.C. police each year without a warrant, according to a new report released Monday by the American Civil Liberties Union. The report, biased at the core, enduring racial disparities in D.C., Metropolitan Police Department, stop and frisk practices, accuses the Department of discriminatory practices, saying black people in the district are overwhelmingly more likely to be searched. Now, tell me something else that's news. Nebraska Attorney General trying to toss laws letting felons vote. Voting rights for felons in Nebraska are in limbo after the state's attorney general has decided to toss the voting laws out. In a moment of bipartisan unity, the Nebraska legislature passed a law 38-6 earlier this year that allowed people convicted of felonies to cast ballots immediately after completing their sentences. The state already had a similar law from 2005 that allowed convicted felons to vote 2 years after completing their sentence. 281 inmates escaped after floods brought down prison walls in northeast Nigeria. Nigerian authorities say 281 inmates escaped after devastating floods brought down a prison wall after the dam burst in that county in Nigeria. Fresh UK prison crisis as riots lead to fears of overcrowding. Exclusive. Emergency plan set to be introduced that could see alleged criminals released and court cases delayed. The prison system in England is set to be thrown into a fresh crisis this week, with scores of alleged criminals to be released on bail rather than taken to court hearings. The jailing of hundreds of rioters has pushed prisons towards full capacity, forcing the department to prepare Operation Early Dawn, a contingency plan that prevents inmates being taken from police cells to courts unless a prison place is available. Those who do not go to court and are given jail sentences may find themselves sent to prisons hundreds of miles from home. Doesn't that sound familiar, like what happened here in D.C.? California's new workplace heat standards don't apply to prisons, reflecting harmful neglect across the United States, forcing incarcerated people to endure dangerously high temperatures does not make anyone safer. When California Workplace Safety Board created important indoor heat protections for workers earlier this year, the policy exempted and did not include prisons. California's governor cited cost concerns, but this unjust exclusion was facilitated by the sadly pervasive perception that people who live and work in prisons deserve torturous conditions. In Louisiana, when trying to persuade voters in Jefferson Davis Parish to fund a new jail, local leaders proudly touted that the facility would not include air conditioning. And that has been the grapevine, the information we wanted to share with you. And as you can see, there's quite a bit of jiggy boogie. And y'all know jiggy boogie. You can interpret jiggy boogie however you want. Now we get to our show. This morning's topic is about the Bureau of Prisons. We'll look at some of the factors and issues concerning the Bureau of Prisons, since most of all of D.C. Code prisoners are transferred to the Federal Bureau of Prisons since the closing of Lawton Correctional Facility over 10 years ago. So all our prisoners are sent to the Bureau of Prisons, and believe me, there's a lot of issues and concerns. And we have a gentleman here with his name is Walt Pavlo. Walt is a nationally recognized expert on white-collar and the federal criminal justice system. He consults, writes, and speaks on topics ranging from white-collar crime to criminal justice. Walt is a popular contributor to Forbes, where he writes on white-collar crime. In addition to that, he's the founder or co-founder of Prisonology, a program that assists families and friends and inmates how to access the Federal Bureau of Prisons with its myriad of problems and regulations and rules. Good morning, Walt Pavlo. Glad you could join us this morning.
Well, good morning, Roach Brown. It's a pleasure to be here, man. And finally, we were able to connect after we tried to do this a few times.
That's right. We sure did, man. You know, things happen. We're together now. Things happen when they happen. Thank you for
That's
being
good.
Here.
Pleasure to be morning. Here.
Would you take a moment, please, and give us a brief overview of what Prisonology is, sir?
Sure. Yeah, I tell you what, Roach. One, I love the show. I'm a listener, and you do some good work, as the grapevine just proved. But Prisonology, I had an idea over 10 years ago that if prosecutors could go on and move on in their life and be defense attorneys, why couldn't Bureau of Prisons professionals go on and be mitigation experts? That's what we are. We have wardens, regional directors, residential drug abuse counselors, disciplinary hearing officers, a little bit of everything that work for us, who provide services. And as you know, what your show provides a very valuable service, just telling us what the hell's going on. What do we expect? There's people that go to federal prison that may have done some jail time, weekends, a week, a year, but now they're looking at 15 years. So, what does that look like? And we provide declarations. We do pre-sentence report analysis on, security classification of where they're going to go, and really just answer a lot of questions. And, as far as the white collar part, we do some of that work, helping out and, telling these guys that have been troubled for the first time, but we do a lot of federal defender work. We do a lot of work with federal defenders and CJA appointers, to, you know, provide declaration work. And that's basically what we do. So anything to do with federal prison, that, you know, we're experts on that. One day I'd like to branch out into a few states and do the same thing, but right now we're focused on federal.
I'm glad you're doing it, because I've been confined several times within the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and I'm very familiar with some of the inner workings, the policies, the procedures, the case managers, the Unicor, and how that whole system works. And there's a lot of issues we wanted to address. That's why we called it thing, that the name of the show is, we're talking about the Bureau of Prisons, but I wanted to call it after that article that you wrote about the Bureau of Prisons issues with First Step Act. I'm glad you did what you did what you're doing. I've never heard of somebody who worked for the Bureau of Prisons come out and work as an advocacy on behalf of those folks who are confined inside. That is something that's needed. It should have been happening a long time ago. And so I'm glad that you are providing these services, because we have over 3,000 men and women confined in the Federal Bureau of Prisons from Washington, D.C. And they are subjected to the Federal Bureau of Prisons laws, regulations, and policies, even though they come from state facilities. Those state laws should be the controlling factor on how these men and women are treated, but it isn't. So, again, over 3,000 folks, and I'm glad that you're dealing with this issue in terms of the First Step Act leads to food strike. What's going on? I heard that your article, Bureau of Prisons Issues with First Step Act Leads to Food Strike. What's going on with the food strike in the Federal Bureau of Prisons? That's the first I heard of that, sir.
Well, let's just take a step back. What the First Step Act is it allows mostly minimum security and some low prisoners to earn time off of their credits. And what they have to do is participate in programming. And then, you know, and it's not that difficult, you know, just go to the class or have a job or do something with religious services. You get either 10, you can get 10 days of credits. Shorten your sentence. And then after a while, you can actually move up to 15 days for every 30 days of programming, up to a maximum of 365 days. But Roach, there's an additional provision that says, if you keep taking classes and keep being a productive member, you know, inside of the general population, you can earn almost an unlimited number of home confinement. As you know, home confinement is a lot better than living in an institution. And that was the purpose of the First Step Act. But what's happened is, even, you know, this was signed when Trump was president, right? In 2000, December of 2018. And here we are going into the fall of 2024. And the Bureau of Prisons is still having significant issues on determining, of all things, when a person is released from the institution. And that has led, you know, a lot of prisoners to go to their case managers and say, hey, you know, I think I'm supposed to be home now. And, you know, what does your calculator say? And so, well, we can't tell you. So, you know, you can imagine the uprise that, you know, and these are camps, you know, for the most part, where this is happening. You're not going to have, you know, uprisings and fights and things like that, but you are going to have, you know, disobedience. And that's really what we're seeing now. And there's not really a hunger strike. It's more or less like, we're just not going to the cafeteria. So you guys prepare all this food and throw it in the trash. You know, because you can always buy stuff in the commissary. But, you know, we're seeing these like mini uprisings around the country, and people trying to find some act of disobedience to bring attention to the fact that they're being housed in institutions longer than the law allows. And, you know, obviously that creates, as you can imagine, if you don't know when you're going home and you think you should be going home, you're being held hostage. You're no longer a prisoner. You're being held as a hostage.
You know, you said something. You said the First Step Act applies to folks in minimum security in the camps and not the medium and maximum security facilities.
Some guys do, but here's the thing, Roach. There's a list of 68 crimes that are, you know, exclude the person from being able to participate or at least apply those credits. So things like, you know, violent crimes, sex offenses, things that involve guns, you know, those tend to be excluded. And that's where you find, you know, guys that are in the mediums and the highs that, you know, just are excluded. And also there, you know, a lot of guys at the mediums and highs have incident reports, which create what they call a pattern score, which is too high. you know, their chance of, you know, their a measure of recidivism and violence. So those guys are primarily excluded. Roach, we could do a whole show on this because, look, I'm one of the biggest proponents about the good things of the First Step Act. But I will tell you, one of the shortcomings of that is that it doesn't give the programming or an incentive for the programming of people who probably need it the most. You know, when you're talking about a white collar guy who's got a 21-month sentence, they're going to get a big advantage in having their sentence reduced under the First Step Act. But a guy who was involved in drugs, that involved a gun, who maybe needs a little bit more programming and, you know, some incentive to better themselves, you know, that just doesn't exist with the First Step Act. But, you know, we got to take what we've got. And right now, the ones that are primary beneficiaries are your minimum security and low security prisoners.
You know, again, this, I call this juggy boogie, Walt. When they pass a law, it's supposed to benefit everybody, and they selectively exclude people based on their crime or their offenses. And we already lock up people, more people than anywhere else in the world, and give them these impossible draconian sentences. And to say that these guys who are in medium or maximum guy got a drug beef or conspiracy, et cetera, and they're not entitled to these benefits. And I read the article that you wrote, and I'm very impressed with the article you wrote. And you quoted a guy and said, this is all about the BOP not giving us answers to things we know about from reading the First Step Act. And I should be home now, and nobody's listening. You got guys in there who've done the time. And if that First Step Act was adequately applied, quite a few men and women would be released. But now they're sitting in prison, and it's double frustrating when you know that the law is black and white. If you break the law, you get 5 years or 10 years, you're sent to prison. They keep their word, they'll lock you up, send you to prison, et cetera. Now when it benefits you, as quoted in your article, the director, Ms. Colette Peters, stated that she got some fresh new calculations that she's released, and that added to the confusion of those men and women who are eligible for release under the First Step Act. What do we do if these men and women who should be released, who pass the release date, and they're in prison, and it wouldn't pass the release date when they locked them up. When they come to get you, they come to get you. When they're supposed to let you out, they're supposed to let you out. But now when it benefits the residents inside, they are in limbo, man. What can be done?
Well, you're exactly right. Look, if you go back a little bit before the First Step Act, Roach, you know as well as I do that it was easy to calculate what your prison sentence was, right? You just had a number of years and, you know, 85% of your sentence, that's when you're getting out, right? With the First Step Act, it's a little bit more complicated, but not that much more. But I will tell you something about Director Peters. She's been on the job a little over 2 years, and her you know, her communications to the general public and to Congress have been, we want to fully implement this First Step Act and get these people back to the community sooner. And I applaud her for that. But the fact of the matter is, that message is not getting down to the case managers. And you know, if you're a prisoner and you have a question about what's going on, you can't call Director Peters and get an answer to your question. You got to deal with it in your case manager. And
that's
if
right.
Your case manager tells you you got nothing coming, where do you go? I mean, you got an administrative, you know, remedy process that could take weeks, months, and then by then you're going to be out anyway. So, you know, the real problem is, I believe, is communication between the top levels of the Bureau of Prisons and the implementation of it on the front line with the case managers, who are pretty much not giving these folks a straight answer as to when they're going home. And that's a really bad situation to be in.
I know that is that desperate and dangerous to be in prison and knowing that you should be out. And you can't get out, you can't get any answers, and it's coming from Washington, and you're in Oklahoma or Texas, and you know that based on the First Step Act, you should be with your family. And these folks don't know what to do. And Director Peters saying that she's straightened up the confusion. But it'll only add to the confusion in terms of the calculation they use to calculate someone's days that they earn or good time credit or mandatory release. It is really, I'm going to say frustrating. It is scary because you got men and women in there, man, who will do whatever, even though you're talking about minimum security, man, you don't want to play with this. When your life is at stake and you're supposed to come home, you want to be home. When they say lock you up, they lock you up. They mean it, and they keep their word. But their word is not being kept now when it complies to those men and women who should be out. Something else I want to add to this. Part of another thing is adding to this problem, Walt, is that halfway houses, you can get released to a halfway house and some of the credits you earn under the First Step Act, once you get your 365 maximum, you can apply that to extend your stay in a halfway house. But in D.C., we don't have a halfway house. All the halfway houses have been shut down. And our men and women have to be sent to Baltimore, Maryland, or Newport News, Virginia. And again, that further compounds this problem. This problem seems it's like a problem that's growing legs in every direction you look. There's another problem with this First Step Act. Since you've been working with this, with the federal system, and you understand this, and I understand, and you also are a returning citizen. Am I correct?
Correct.
Man, I'm glad to know you, man. I'm glad. I'm glad. Man, keep missing the counts, would you, Walt?
Hey, Roach, let me tell you something. You are hitting on the biggest problem of implementing the First Step Act is halfway houses. Not only is it a problem in D.C., it's a problem all over the country. Now, there are contracts out there. It's hard to open up a halfway house. Everybody agrees that there should be halfway houses. Houses serve two purposes. One, to provide housing for a person who's coming out of prison and they need a bed until they can get their feet under them. I understand that. And number two, they also do the monitoring for home confinement. You know, they call, make sure the person's where they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. With the First Step Act, and this gets to your earlier point where you're talking about people who are ineligible for the, you know, we're not getting the full advantage of First Step Act. The Bureau of Prisons is transitioning because of this law to putting more minimum security people in halfway houses than they do guys coming from penitentiaries who've been in for 20 and 30 years. I mean,
yes.
So that, you know, that's going to create some other issues. And I'm all for helping anybody get out of these situations. Do your time, you know, and move on back to society. But what we're having now is a shortage of halfway house, just like you said. And number two, the shortages are going to start to be filled by people who honestly, you know, they don't need it. They have a home. They don't need these facilities. So the BOP has got to expand dramatically what they have to accommodate all returning citizens. And, you know, right now they just, you know, they're in a jam because they have a capacity issue.
I'm glad you said that, Walt. See, like, again, I call it juggie boogie. You hit that on the head, Walt, in terms of you got men who did 15, 20, 30, 40, or 50 years in prison. These are the men and women who really need to be in a halfway house. And as you said, most folks at the camp are white-collar offenses, nonviolent, low-level felons, et cetera, and they do 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and they have resources. But when you go 20, 30, 40, 50 years, all your resources have evaporated. You don't be lucky if you have any family. And for these men who are needed, and they don't have any, that's the crisis we're dealing with now. We did a couple of shows, Walt, on this about the homeless problem. Men did 40 and 50 years come out, and it's like being locked up on malls. They don't know how to navigate the street, the Safeways, the grocery stores. They don't know how to put on seat belts or use the restrooms, et cetera. So it's a whole another crisis on top of a crisis. And I don't know what needs to be done, because in Washington, D.C., we've been talking to our local elected officials, and we do not have a halfway house, and we need one. You got men and women in prison that should be released based on the First Step Act. Some men and women are eligible for compassion release. All these release mechanisms that are available are not being utilized because of what's going on out here in the street. And as I said before, at the top of the show in Grapevine, the ACLU just issued a report in Washington, D.C. that the Metropolitan Police Department has been locking up the majority of the stop and frisk are young black men. And we all know this is a problem all over the country. And when you lock them guys up and put them in, that just further exasperate the problem. What is the directors doing now, Director Peters, do you know, Walt, to resolve this issue about the First Step Act calculations?
Well, there's two things. What she mentioned in Congress recently, that the halfway house situation is a crisis. Within the last couple of weeks, the BOP has made tremendous strides in trying to make their calculator work. Okay, but the problem they're running into right now is they don't know how to explain how it works. And and they provided information out there that has led some prisoners to believe that they should be home, when in fact that's not exactly what the BOP meant. But those those are issues that are communication issues, and I think those are the biggest issues that the Bureau of Prisons has right now. And they have got to start moving people out of the prisons. The prisons are crumbling. Let me just take a step back, Roach. The BOP has a problem. They got staffing shortages, and they have infrastructure shortages, in these prisons. And there are approximately 50,000 prisoners that could get some reduction, either go to home confinement or have their sentences cut as a result of First Step Act. So I hear what you're saying. A lot of guys in mediums and highs aren't going to get a lot of the benefits of that. But there's 50,000 people who can throughout the Bureau of Prisons. And the best way to, when you've got a staffing shortages, is to have less product, all right? The product is people. So you need to move, people out, and then they can focus on a lot of the other, more important issues, I believe, that there are with our higher security, prisoners that are out there that are going to return to society. And we can't treat them like crap and then 20 years later throw them out on the street. I mean, that just is not going to serve anybody any good. And so, what Peters has really said is that she wants to get these folks that can benefit the most out of the system quickly. But they're having a hell of a time doing it. I mean, they, some have gotten out, but not enough.
Wow. So we're in an ongoing crisis that's growing and growing and growing, because a couple other things that's tied into this is, like, when these men and women are released, you're supposed to get what's called gratuitous gate money, or money upon your release, $50, $100 or whatever. But the BOP will not give you whatever the allotted money is prescribed if you have money in your inmate commissary account. And you got, if you have $10, $20, $30, you don't get the $50 or $100, whatever. We had a case of a guy who did 33 years. He came out and they gave him $100. And he hadn't seen a dollar bill in 33 years. And the guy didn't know what to do or how to respond. And then he gave him debit cards. But we'll be inviting you back, Walker. Since you're on top of the Bureau of Prisons, we have a lot of issues. And one of them that's real pressing to us is these families who have to travel thousands of miles, man, to see their loved ones. When you get there, there's a dress policy or code that you can't wear this and you can't come in. They weren't informed of this. So the man is placed in SHU, special housing, or in solitary, and the family drive all the way to Oklahoma, and they're not allowed to visit or see their loved ones, and they weren't told or informed prior to they get there. These kind of issues adds to the exasperation on top of the men waiting to come out in the First Step Act. Is that at the beginning of our show, if you notice, we had four little girls talking. We always had these four little kids over the back show, and these are some of our little nieces. And one of the little girls is 10 years old and have a father in Beaumont, Texas, and she hadn't seen him in 9 years, and she wanted to see her daddy. And these kind of problems of connecting families with their loved ones, and when they go to prison, they get subjected to all types of discrimination, humiliation, and whatever. What can you do, or your organization, Prisonology, do you work or assist families who are having problems accessing the BOP and how their loved ones are being treated?
We do. And I wanted to tell you, you guys are in D.C. We do a lot of work in D.C., D.C. Superior Court. We work on those IRA cases, which are the Incarceration Reduction Amendment Act. We work on a lot of those. We look at compassionate release cases. We look through Bureau of Prisons records for these folks and try to tell, put some context in it as to why they would be a good returning citizen based on their behavior, while they've been in prison. And D.C. people, as you know, are some of the most difficult cases, because they're being shipped primarily far from home. They could be in California and they're, all their roots could be there. And the other thing is, they had a reputation, I believe wrongly, that says, oh, they're DC guys, you know, that's, you know, and all of a sudden it stigmatizes them. Either they got to stick together in a group to protect themselves, or they're harassed. And, you know, I've actually talked, Roach, to some DC, you know, prisoners have been in for many decades. They prefer being out west, further away from the East Coast, so that they can just like blend in with whoever's out there, because they don't want to be known as a DC guy. They just want to be, I just want to do my time and go home. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of discrimination that has gone on over the years wrongly for DC prisoners, that just, they were badder than the rest or whatever, you know, just because they had some bad experiences at Lorton. Not totally not fair, but we work a lot of IRA cases, and we work a lot of cases where we're trying to help people just get in contact, or, you know, just do the right thing, BOP, just do the right thing.
You know, you hit on something that's well known throughout the federal system, that DC prisoners have a reputation in the federal system that they are hard to manage. DC prisoners stick together. And it's one of the few places that you have to be in a gang in order to survive. The Spanish inmates are in a gang, the Aryan Brotherhood, the whites. So if you need to lock, click up, even though you don't want to participate in it. So all DC prisoners have been stigmatized in terms of they stick together. They don't put up with no jiggy bug and that kind of stuff, and it caused problems. And you have to be in a gang. I never wanted to join a gang, but when I was in the Fed, I had to join in order to make sure if I got into a fight or a situation, I got some support. So you're forced into this just because you are by yourself. And in all other institutions, in fact, prisons are the most segregated part of society. Every prison or jail you go into, nationalities, ethnicities, and different groups and locations stick together, and you have to. And that's and what blows my mind with this, Walt, is that these men and women stick together and they go inside a prison, and they would fight to the death. So when they come out in the street, they fight each other. You know, and they can use that kind of unity or togetherness. Maybe we can make something again, because we've been trying to get guys to work, let returning citizens own and operate their own halfway house. There was a group in Washington some time ago called Efforts for Ex-Convicts. And it was an organization formed, staff, operated by returning citizens. And they had a halfway house for 30-some years in Washington, D.C. And they ran it successfully. But because of politics or politrics, they're no longer there. So we need to make sure these men and women coming out can reintegrate back into this. And I'd like to see some of them be hired by the BOP as correction officers, as case managers. Everybody else is hiring folk who came through their system and received their services. Do you think that's a possibility, or what's your position on hiring returning citizens to work as correction officers or staff in the Bureau of Prisons?
Hey, I think you would get a fresh perspective, that's for sure. The Bureau of Prisons recently hired, without mentioning her name, somebody who worked at the Families Against Mandatory Minimums, which I think was a good step in the direction that you're talking about. They've also started inside the Bureau of Prisons an advocacy group that I reach out to quite often on issues like what you're talking about, and say, hey, this person's, you know, driving all these miles and they're not getting in, you know, they need health care, whatever it is, you know, I would do that. But I think that would be, if they're not directly working for the BOP, they're given input. And I will credit Director Peters with the implementation of listening sessions. She's conducted a number of these where she talks to corrections people, she talks to wardens, she talks to shareholders who are advocating for people, and returned citizens, and even people that are in prison, to speak up about issues that they believe that they're, you know, that are affecting them. She's done a good job of that. What she hasn't been able to do is translate that into some sort of an action plan that leads to results, real tangible results that I think is demonstrated that you're not delivering results if you're having people in a prison camp that are refusing to go to chow hall or lining up and, you know, disgruntled. We had somebody's pulling the fire alarm every other day because they're just upset, you know, just acts of disobedience. Mm-hmm. So something is wrong, but the BOP has opened up their doors a little bit. Believe me, listening sessions before Colette Peters were non-existent. So mm-hmm. I got to give her credit for that. So she's heard, she hears a lot, but the thing is, okay, once you hear, you got to do something. And that's the part I think is missing right now.
This is WPFW 89.3 FM on your dial. This is Crossroads coming to you from Washington, D.C., and our show is heard around the world. I want to thank everybody for listening and tuning in. Our guest this morning is Walt Pavlo, president of Prisonology, and we're talking about the Bureau of Prisons and, specifically, the First Step Act. How can, and if you want to call in to participate in this discussion, the phone number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. If you want to call in with a question or comment for our guest, Walt Pavlo, who I am glad to know is a returnee. And I love returnees because we've been through the same jiggy-boogie, man. And I, you understand it from both sides of the perspective.
My, hey, I will tell you, Roach, my experience was about 21 years ago. Anybody asked me what the BOP was like back then, I say, well, it was, I changed out the white milk and the chocolate milk and the strawberry milk and changed the syrup on the Coca-Cola machine. Long gone, man. Okay.
If possible.
Oh boy, you know, as you know, Roach, the best advocacy takes place from the prisoner. You know, they have to speak up on their own behalf, and that's a big issue. What I've done at Prisonology is everything that I learned from, you know, the paying customers that we have, we put out on Forbes, or I come on shows like yours to tell them as much as I can. In the Bureau of Prisons, the best way to advocate for yourself is to read the stuff that I put out there, listen to this stuff, read the First Step Act law as much as you can. But you know, it's the administrative remedy process. You know, there's ways to communicate with your case manager. This isn't that difficult. You know, you got a lot of time in prison. You can just say, hey, if I subtract 15 days from my sentence, you know, what is it now? So, I mean, the administrative remedies one, I'm trying to, you know, I would love to somebody to bring a lawsuit against the Bureau of Prisons about the First Step Act, because I think that's how you're eventually going to get something done, you know?
Yes, and, yes.
Because prisoners just can't do it all themselves. You know, they're right. Isolated. We don't know exactly what's going on the ground, and we don't know that relationship with the case manager. So, that's tough.
You know, in your article that you wrote, that we're using Bureau of Prisons issues with First Step Act leads to food strike, you quoted a guy in there named Donovan Davis. I assume he's an inmate lawyer, a jailhouse lawyer. He's a prisoner at FPC Montgomery. And he said, I should be home now and nobody's listening. And they read and know all the answers to the First Step Act. So I'm in the same position here. Maybe one of the jailhouse lawyers or somebody needs to file a class action suit or a suit against the BOP in terms of not implementing this First Step Act. Because the way things are going now, you got guys who are passed. And that is a terrible feeling, man. That's like, I don't know how you describe that when you're supposed to be out and be released and you're still in prison and you don't know what to do and everybody you call don't have an answer. That is a terrible situation, and it leads to frustration and potential violence and harm for everybody, for the staff and for the men and women still inside of there. So you suggested this. Are you or your firm interested or willing to do that class action suit, or somebody need to get the ball rolling, to get this thing
working on it? You know, I mean, I tell you, I participated in a project recently with the Andrew Young Foundation out of Atlanta. And they were looking at different people who were in prison to see if they were being held too long. And, you know, we went through some of the calculations, and sure enough, they were. You know, they should be on home confinement according to the First Step Act. But, you know, the answer was, well, we don't have any place to put them. And I'm right. Saying, well, I'm sorry, that's the law. And going back to your guy about Davis, you know, this is a guy who got over a 10-year prison term. He has his year off, and he's earned a couple of years of home confinement. And he's saying, hey, when are you guys going to send me to a halfway house? So, or, you know, to home confinement. And it just is not, you know, it just isn't happening.
Is that frustrating because
you asked me earlier, like, what do? The dude's got the law on his side. He's got the director of prisons on his side. And he still can't get out.
Ain't that something? So what did he do? Wait a minute. We got two calls on. We'll take our first caller, Walt.
Take a call.
You're on the air, first caller. Question or comment, please, for Walt.
This is Rick calling you long distance from Germany, man.
I knew you called, Rick. I need to talk to you, man. We got a guest on from you in Florida, aren't you, Walt?
Yeah.
And we got a guy on the phone now from Germany. Come on, Rick. You got a question for our guest?
Yeah, I just want to say that in the black community, and in particular in the mafia criminal community, there's the belief that Trump, if elected, is going to spread around the money, not only to the wealthy, but to the criminal community. What do you say will happen to the American prison system if Trump is reelected?
Go ahead, Walt. You got it.
Man, I tell you, I like staying away from politics, Roach. but the caller brings up a really good point. You know, Rick, this is, you know, what will happen? You have to go back. You know, if I look at criminal justice reform, you look back at who was the president when they started locking everybody up? Is Bill Clinton. All right. And then who was the president when they said, hey, we need to start giving people second chances? That's George W. Bush with the Second Chance Act. And then if you go further down the line and you say, well, who gave us the First Step Act? That's Donald Trump. So, you know, you just sort of, you know, the Democrats have always sort of said, we need to, be easier on crime, or, you know, not lock people up for so long. But the facts bear out that a lot of the meaningful legislation to criminal justice reform has come under Republican presidents. Trump's a bit of a wild card. I think that's an understatement. You know, what he would do, I'm not sure. But the First Step Act was definitely his key piece of legislation, and probably expanding it and moving it to other parts, it would be something that he would be interested in. I will say this, you know, we had the CARES Act that was implemented that allowed some prisoners who were minimum security and older and sick to go home during the pandemic. Trump's administration said, hey, once the epidemic's over, we got to send these guys back to prison. And Biden came in and says, no, don't send them back to prison. So, you know, one of the things that I think is unfortunate about our politics is that it shouldn't be playing such a role in people's lives. They should just pass legislation, get it implemented.
Out of your way.
But there's a lot of politics involved in incarceration and where there shouldn't be.
Yeah, politics and money. We got another call on. Question or comment, please. You're on the air. Hello.
Turn your radio down, please. You're on the air.
Okay, hold on a second.
Go ahead, you're on.
Hello?
Yes, come on.
Hello?
Come on,
hello?
Come on.
Yeah, what I'd like to talk about is like the claims that inmates have when they leave prison. Will they be able to force the department or the Bureau of Prisons to honor the claims that inmates have in against them as far as property losses and stuff like that? A lot of people had to leave claims in prison that they never fulfilled. I've written back to them, and I've never gotten a response. But has he ever looked at any cases that involves in holding them accountable for the property that's lost to inmates in the process of incarceration?
Good question. Go ahead, Walt. Good question.
Well, there's a tort claim that you can give with the BOP, but it's a broken process, you know, and then what happens to the property is probably destroyed. But, you know, you're probably asking about a claim, like, you know, what value do you put on it? I've seen the BOP put, you know, small dollar amounts on these things, $100, $200. So I haven't seen anything big. You know, I will say, kind of going more toward the main topic on this First Step Act, is that, you know, I'm trying to figure out a mechanism just on that to you know, how do you recover some value for being in prison longer than you should have been by the law? So, I mean, there's a lot of cases that I believe there's tens of thousands of those cases out there. We need to figure out a way to bring that down, because that's how you make change. But yeah, but going up against the BOP, asking for property, I don't know how you, I really don't know how you do that in a meaningful way to get something, you know, of value back, you know, or right, some monetary reward.
I had the same situation that I called you. I went through and had some property taken. You can't get it. Question. Walt, do you think these guys got grounds for a suit if they're being overly incarcerated when they're supposed to have been released based on the First Step Act or whatever? Do you think they had grounds for a possible suit to be compensated for this over-incarceration?
I do. There were people in 2022, particularly as it goes toward late 2022 and early 2023, that got no First Step Act credits, even when there was a First Step Act calculator. There are literally tens of thousands of people who overstayed anywhere from a day to several months, you know, in an institution, you know, and that needs to be qualified and quantified. And nobody's done that yet, but that's something that I would like. That's a meaningful project I would like to be involved in.
Well, we'll be in touch with you, Walt, because I'm glad that you in Prisonology is on top of the BOP, and you got former employees of the BOP, so they know exactly what the issues were, et cetera. And I'm glad to see that folk are trying to do this. But I want to ask this question in terms of what congressperson or somebody up on the Hill do we have the support of that can help push this thing along in terms of the halfway house and getting this First Step Act implemented or recalculated? Is there anybody that's on our side that's supportive of our issues in Congress?
You know what? This is a great point, Roach. The First Step Act passed with over 83% approval from the House. All right. You name me one piece of legislation that got 82 to 83% pass in the House in the last decade. It just hasn't happened. So your answer is, it's Republicans, Democrats, Independents, all of them want this to happen. And yet we, you know, the House has recently passed an oversight rule where they're going to, you know, you're going to see Colette Peters going more and more up in front of the House and say, hey, what the heck is going on over there? I mean, you got to think, she is not a political appointee. She's not a presidential appointee. She's hired as a job inside the Department of Justice for an $8.3 billion budget. I mean, that's...
How much is the budget again?
$8.3 billion.
The largest
budget in the DOJ. It goes to the Bureau of Prisons. So... you know, there's got to be more oversight there, particularly when, you know, Congress is passing laws that say, hey, we're giving you laws that are supposed to reduce this prison population. Why is there no meaningful reduction? You know, Roach, there are more people in federal prison today than there were before COVID.
Wow. And I thought it was going down.
It did go down. It stopped going down. It's on the way back up. It's trickling up, but it's on the way back up.
You know, one of the things I think that's contributing to that, and we talked about this a few months ago on our show, that the federal judiciary has a 95 to 98% conviction rate. When folks get locked up by the feds, the majority of people take a cop or plead guilty because of a fear of mandatory minimum. If you go to trial and lose, you get the mandatory 15 or 20. So they're offering you 2, 3, 4, a smaller sentence. And that is playing a big part in people going to prison, because whether you're innocent or guilty, if you're facing 20 years and they offer you 3, even though you didn't do it, you'll take the 3, because if you lose and get found guilty, you got the 20. You know what I mean? So our criminal justice system needs to be revamped. Also, on the debate that happened a couple of weeks ago with Kamala Harris and Trump, neither one of them spoke about the criminal justice system, what's being done, what needs to be done, and what they plan to do once they got in the office, if either one of them got in. And I found that was a big disappointment. I didn't hear Kamala Harris or former President Trump speak about what they're going to do for the criminal justice, the First Step Act pardon. I was surprised to find out I looked on the BOP's website and started researching this show, and there's been like 8 people executed in the last 6 years by the Bureau of Prisons. Over 8 mm-hmm. people, man. And they've just quietly been executing people up at Terre Haute, and we haven't heard about it until after the thing. So Trump is pushing the death penalty. No, he says he's going to bring it back. What's your take on that, Walt?
Well, I too was disappointed. You know, and as far as I'm surprised that Trump, I've hardly ever heard him bring it up. I think it would be an excellent talking point for him about First Step Act and what he did on criminal justice reform. I have yet to see him have any meaningful sort of promotion about that. And maybe right. It's just not good politics. Kamala Harris was a prosecutor. So, you know, hers tends to be on the victim side, you know, the prosecution side. And the last debate was disappointing. The only thing we got out of that was, you know, the people eating dogs and cats. So, you know, there's some substantive issues that need to take place. And I'm disappointed in both candidates as far as what they would do on criminal justice reform. Neither of them have done it.
Before we go, you want to tell us a little bit more, give us some closing remarks on how people can contact you and the services you provide. We got 2 minutes before we get out of here. You got to work out a little bit.
Okay. So we work a lot with federal public defenders, and most of the ways that's the best way to ask for our services for declarations and consulting work. You know, just to go through, you know, through the case, if you're doing compassionate release, go through your federal defender. They're the ones that hire us. If you're looking for, you know, general information, we have different products that are at, you know, low affordable prices to help out on First Step Act. In particular, we do an analysis that you could share with your case manager. It shows you exactly the credits that you got coming to you. We do that. You can check out our website is prisonology.com. And, you could submit a question on there. We can get back to you. And, look, what we try to do is, you know, look, Google me, you know, Walter Pavlo, on Forbes, lots of good articles out there. Lots of good articles that are also from Forbes are on our website so that you can look at them there. Provides a lot of useful information. You know, you guys in prison, you're your own best advocate. But if we can help, you know, reach out to us. You can also email us at info@prisonology.com. Happy to take as many questions as we can and get answers back to you.
And if you weren't able to write any of that down, you can call us here at the station, Martina and I, and we'll forward that information to you. Our guest has been Walt Pavlo, president of Prisonology. And folk, you got help. We got loved ones in the federal system. You got somebody now who's knowledgeable, informed, and got a track record that can do something to help you with some of your issues, visiting your loved ones in the federal system. This has been Crossroad. I'm Roach Brown, and we'll see you next week. And Martine, and thank you. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas. Father, watching us fall.
Society presents the 20th annual A Love Supreme, a musical poetic birthday tribute to another John Coltrane, featuring the Nassau Holiday Quartet, Cindy Brown, and Nikki Taiva, Nana Malay, and the Malcolm X Drummers and Dancers. Friday, September 20th, 2024, at E-Life Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue in Capitol Heights, Maryland. There will also be a special tribute to our esteemed ancestors in Black culture, politics, and music. More information can be found at Blue Nile, Sankofa Books, Sinbeb Cafe, or Everlasting Life, and at 240-832-7203 or ubcindc@yahoo.com. That's ubcindc@yahoo.com. It's the 20th annual A Love Supreme, a musical, poetic birthday tribute to Anetaruth, John Coltrane. This Friday, September 20th at E-Life Restaurant, presented by United Black Community.
Diverse City Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for D.C. people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, September 20th. Details and application information are available at www.diversecityfund.org. You can send questions to info@diversecityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and past recordings are accessible online at www.diversecityfund.org. The phone number for further information is 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Code Pink Women for Peace is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
Bethesda Theater presents the SOS Band on Friday and Saturday, September 20th and 21st. Spyro Gyro celebrating their 50th anniversary on Sunday, October 13th, and Norman Brown on Sunday, October 20th. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
WPFW's This Is Reggae Music and the Reggae Experience presents a fundraising concert featuring Image Band, Curlew Reggae All-Stars Band, Lady Flame, and Carl Malcolm. On Saturday, October the 5th, 7 p.m. until midnight at King Solomon Lodge, 2245 Rhode Island Avenue, Northeast Washington, D.C. Tickets available at Eventbrite by searching WPFW. All proceeds benefit WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America.